honourable chair, honourable members. We had been before the committee before, I believe it was on the 16th of September, when we presented the France Farming Animals Protection Act, and at the time there were Parliament took note of the ruling of the Constitutional Court, and which needed to, Parliament had to ensure that it became effective within 18 months after that ruling. And that would have taken us to the 8th or the 10th of January. Based on Parliament's advice, we applied for an extension, and so where we are here ready to present and also to bring to the notice of the House that the date now for enactment is what, the 30th of June? 12th of July. So wherever the discussion goes, to be within those parameters. Chair, we also feel it probably would have been far more, although the House can decide how it will operate, but we feel a little bit that was, we should have been included in the discussion earlier. There was a presentation by the state law advisor, and industry was allowed to be here, we not them, and so we've been put places to disadvantage when we could have assisted the House in making decisions.
I will ask
the colleague who's been leading this project, Dr. Nwabo, to take the House through the presentation which honourable members have before you.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Chair, honourable members, good day. We will just take you through the presentation as a briefing note regarding the performing Animal Protection Amendment Bill. This is just the outline of the presentation. We'll just take you through the acronyms used in the presentation, give you a bit of a background introduction, how the bill has developed, and the specific technical amendments that we are inserting into the Principal Act. And then we will take you through the consultation process, and then we will talk a brief about the financial implications and the recommendations. In this presentation, we've used a lot, APA, which means Animal Protection Act, DAF, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, PAPA, the Performing Animal Protection Act, and NSPCA, the National Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Honourable members, the Performing Animals Protection Act is among the acts that were transferred to the Department of Agriculture from the then Department of Justice. Now, this act in 2012, the NSPCA was concerned about the constitutionality of Section 2 and Section 3. This section specifically provides for the delegated powers of which such magistrate as having the authority for issuing of licenses for performing animals. The case went to the Northern Gauteng High Court, and because it was a constitutional case, it ended up at the Constitutional Court, and on the 11th of July 2013, the Constitutional Court of South Africa declared Section 2 and Section 3 of PAPA to be unconstitutional, and the judgment also ordered the Parliament to remedy this unconstitutionality within 18 months, which the DG has already alluded to, which was to be done by the 10th of January 2015. The DG has already alluded to the fact that towards the end of last year, on the advice of the honourable members, we approached the Constitutional Court to request an extension, which was granted on the, that now the extension is given up to the 12th of July 2015. In terms of that judgment, the key issue was just centered on the fact that the magistrates, being the members of the judiciary, were required to do to issue the licenses in terms of the old act, and that that act ought to be done by the executive or administration, which is the department. Now, at the time of the judgment, the department noted the constitutional court judgment and initially considered the implications. Now, there were three options that we considered. One, the first one was to look at specifically Section 2 and Section 3 as the technical amendments that have been held unconstitutional and just deal with those. The second option was a total repeal of this act, since it's among the very old acts, and to replace it with a new holistic comprehensive animal welfare act. At the time, we were considering to repeal all the pieces of legislation that deals with animal welfare individually and to combine them so that we just have one holistic act that deals with animal welfare. The option three was to consider the total repeal of APA and PAPA and consolidate them again into the same Animal Welfare Act. It became very clear just from the initial consultations and so on that a total repeal of all animal welfare related acts would require a substantial period of time, and therefore it was not going to be possible to complete that within the 18-month period that we were given. And therefore, just for practical reasons, option one was, which only considers technical amendments to the existing Performing Animal Act, was then recommended, focusing only on Section 2 and Section 3. The advantage of this option was considered as that it lies in the remedying of the constitutional judgment quicker than the other options. And therefore, the implementation of option one was adopted as it would assist the parliament to comply with the constitutional judgment. So, in simple terms, honourable members, the amendment we have in front of us proposes that the function of issuing licenses previously performed by the magistrate are to be delegated to provincial state vet offices or any other office of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries that is already within the ground, with animal scientists in the same magisterial area. The idea was that when we do these ethical amendments, they must not do substantive changes into how the clients were getting their licenses. If the clients were getting their licenses in the nearest magistrate office, they must just still go to that very same vicinity, and instead of entering the magistrate office, they enter the state fed office, and that the routine that they have been following would not be significantly disturbed by that process. Honorable members, now I want to say through the technical amendments. Essentially, this amendment bill provides for the designation of national licensing officer. It provides for the procedure for the applications for a license to exhibit, train, or use animals. It also provides for the functions of the national licensing officer, provide for the issuance of licenses, and then consequentially, we had to then amend the certain definitions that are needed because we're introducing new terms that were not there in the Act. And then we also provide for an option where there could be appeals by any person who is not happy about the license that has been issued or denied. Now, essentially, the clause 1 and 2 of the Act, they just repeal the Section 2 and Section 3 respectively. These clauses are the clauses that specifically the Constitutional Court said they were unconstitutional. They dealt with the magistrate issuing licenses for the exhibition and training of performing animals. and for the use of dogs for safeguards. Then insert certain clauses that were to assist us in giving the berth of the licensing officer and the licensing function in general. So clause 3 basically is the insertion then of those clause 3A to 3L. This clause set out for procedure for granting of these licenses and matters connected therewith. The clause further provides for a designation of the national licensing officer, qualifications and functions of the national licensing officer, the appointment of experts to assist the national licensing officer, the delegation of powers and functions by the national licensing officer, the procedure for consideration and granting of applications for licensing, the duration of the license, the process for the application of the license, the hearing of applications if the national licensing officer cannot make determination on the documents provided, and the process for issuing the licenses, the process for withdrawal of the licenses, and the validity of licenses when we said that they would be valid anyway within the federal public. Then clause number 4 seeks to amend section 11. Essentially, this clause is consequential. It seeks to incorporate additional destinations into the Act that are consequential to the revised procedure adopted for granting of licenses. We have specifically added the following definitions that did not exist in the previous Act. And it's the animal scientist, the officer, the national licensing officer, and a veterinarian. The clause number 5, honorable members, is an extension of section 11A, and this clause specifically provides for an appeal process by in section of 11A. 11A provides for the establishment of an ad hoc appeal board by the minister, the appointment of members, appointment of chairman and function of such persons. And then finally, clause number 6 is just the insertion of a short title of the bill. This clause provides that the short title of this act upon the enactment and is the Performing Animal Protection Amendment Bill 2015, if we deal with it now, which comes into operation at a date fixed in by proclamation in the process. Honorable members, I mentioned that this is just the option one that deals with the technical amendments to the bill, but we have already started the big work that deals with dealing once and for all holistically with the issues pertaining to the animal welfare. As a result, a holistic animal welfare strategic framework in response to short and long-term animal welfare matters has already been drafted and is currently undergoing formal departmental approval processes. In this regard, we envisage a comprehensive, modern animal welfare bill, and the bill will be repealed, will repeal and substitute all old animal welfare related acts. The crafting of the new animal welfare bill is still in its infancy stage, and for now we're just addressing these technical issues that are concourse, which we consider it as paramount. In view of the time constraints, the department has also successfully approached the Constitutional Court and requested the extension until the 12th July, as we have already mentioned. And DAF continues to interact with stakeholders on PAPA. We issued a press statement. We have also done some few radio and TV information sharing sessions about this, where we are encouraging the members to consult the bill which is already in our website, and that they must also participate in making sure that it's finalized. Honourable members, in as far as the consultation is concerned, we gazetted the first draft of the bill on the 9th of April 2014, and we also invited the written comments. We received comments from all those organizations that are mentioned there. I will not really read them one by one. In addition to the written comments, honourable members, we also held an oral speech, holder workshop, which we held at Pretoria Zoo. One, we were excited about the range of organizations, both from the industry that make use of the animals, as well as from the animal welfare organizations, where we also consolidated the inputs from in that regard. And then from there, we had a lot of interactions with the state law advisors and so on in order to try and consolidate and come to this final version of the bill that is before you today. The bill we have, honorable members, is really different from the what was gazetted, and that's the reason behind that is based on the fact that after receiving all the inputs, we developed it into the current version. Honorable members, there will be financial implications with regards to the implementation of this. In the short term, DAF and the Provincial Department of Agriculture will reprioritize the existing resources in order to accommodate this new function which we are expected to take over from the 12th of July. And the department will be encouraged to utilize the existing state veterinarians and animal scientists in different municipal districts. However, we are beginning to put costs and so on as to what will it entail to put a fully functional structure for the animal welfare in DAF. And therefore, in the outer years, we will have to cater for the new component on animal welfare, and an estimated budget of $54 million has been envisaged to carry the operations and the structure of the National Licensing Officer, the technical staff, which is veterinarians, animal scientists, and the administrative staff that is with this function. Honorable members, it is recommended that the portfolio committee take note of the bill, and after due consideration and public consultations, the committee approves the Performing Animal Protection Amendment Bill and recommends the bill to the president to be signed into. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think that concludes our presentation on Papa Ashe. I've got the acting DG of that branch and a few of our state veterinarians and the head of our legal services with us to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Honorable Carter, Honorable Stain. Honorable Fultani. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly want to really, and my concern is just jokingly this morning you were talking about, oh, let's quickly increase the budget, you know, just jokingly. But, you know, we really have to, we look at the budget of 54 million rand, and we really have to ask, how is the department going to actually deal with the extra cost? How are we going to finance it? I mean, if we just have a look at the 27th of March, the Portfolio Committee of Agriculture announced that the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is scheduled to have the largest percentage cut into the budget by fishery. We're talking about a cut of 158 million rand for 2015-2016, 210 million for 2016-2017, and a 200 million cut for 2017-2018. It is a concern how we're going to actually finance it. You know, and we just need to really, and this is to support the department to make it successful. There are still some of the issues that we raised in September are still not being clarified. I do understand, I just believe that we need to look at a clear indication of what is exempted. The reason that clear exemption is necessary, we are talking here about definitions. At first I asked the question, what is the definition of any animal? We, the law advisors gave us the definition, you know, it's a cat, it's any dog, all that type of thing. So I think those are things, sheep, pigs, all of that is included. So agricultural animals are included. So I think we need to specify more and be a lot clearer on the definition and what is exempted. I do understand that exemption is part of non-profit, but then we also have to ask ourselves, non-profit, what about pigeon racing, what about the winning bull that is winning the competition for, you know, at a show, okay, that is not, it could be a profit and no longer a non-profit. What about, so if we look at, if it is for profit, what about aquarium? You know, we've got to ask ourselves those questions, but we try and cover any loophole that is there, possibly there. If we, I must say, and I think it is important that we request the department, as we've requested for researchers this morning, if there's any regulations published, just have the decency of notifying the committee. Because, you know, to find an email or a frantic SMS that someone just by chance saw that there is a bill being gazetted, or there is regulations being gazetted, regulations that take decisions that is not even covered. I mean, but that we're not going to get into the regulations now, but I'm going to ask the committee that we actually, in our next meeting, discuss the regulations that were gazetted a week and a half ago. Because there's a lot of questions here. How did we even get to deciding on the change of fee? How do we decide on all of those things? I mean, we talk about a fee from, a minimum fee from 50 Rand before is now around 400 Rand. We're talking about a national license, but we're also talking about a moving permit. So what happens in the event where, for example, traditional leaders are taking their horses to go horse racing, but they're moving it from one area to another area, now they have to get a permit to actually move it. So we need to look at those regulations, and it's important that we discuss that in our next meeting. And, you know, if we look at I'm going to just give you the 3D and 3E, open doors to malicious experts. When I say malicious experts, okay? 3D, for example, we've got to ask ourselves a question. We now currently have inspection of premises. How will this now affect, for example, film locations, security dog sites? For example, let's just say macro cash and carry, for example. I've got security dogs. Now, how are they going to feel if any person can just walk in there at any time and come and search the premises of macro where there's a security dog? So those are loopholes that we need to look at that are going to affect the industry, but also not only the trainers, actually going to affect the businesses. We also, 3H is confusing. We appoint a national licensing officer, but 3H envisages a national licensing officer in every district. Now I'm asking myself, we look at the scarce skills, can DAF actually afford this? You know, financially, number one, and also if we look at the scarce skills. Chair, I'm going to, for now, I will stand down, let the other members ask questions, and I will request, if there's anything that was not covered by the other members, then I'll come back, because one of the very important parts is the House of Traditional Leaders, item 18.1A. But as other members raised it, I'd like them to cover that question.
Another
word.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I also wanted to start on the issue of the budget. We have discussed the budget cut, and it's a serious concern, especially if we look at the proposal that would come into effect in the next few years. But even talking about immediately, if this bill needs to come into act this year, we know that we don't even have enough vets as it is. We have a shortage of veterinarians. So if we need to get a presentation from the department, if we are putting it in place, like, to me it sounds like we're doing a short-term thing to fix the legal problem or the constitutional court case. Will we be able to do it? Because we're now going to say that it needs to move to... I know that in most districts there's at least magistrates, but I don't think in most districts there's veterinarians. Where I come from, I don't even know where is the nearest state veterinarian. The my nearest state veterinarian lives in Colesburg, and I'm from the Eastern Cape, so Colesburg's from the Northern Cape. We're going to sit with the same problem that we have with hospitals and clinics. I live on the border of the Free State, the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape. Our nearest state hospital is actually in the Northern Cape. But ambulance services just doesn't mean to take anyone to the Northern Cape or the Free State. Bloemfontein is my nearest big hospital. We don't travel from Venterstad 400 kilometers to PE or East London, and Bloemfontein is 200 because of provincialization. We need to talk about these things. Chairperson, in practice, how does it work? We know that there's a problem at the moment with animal health because of provincialization. So we need to, please, we need to get clarity on that. It's all good and well to say it's now going to move to someone else to fix a temporary problem. So we need, as a next presentation, some more clarity and detail on that. How is it going to work? Will the current... agreement or whatever with provinces and national allow something like that, and where are the beats? We need to see specifically around the country. We know how many, 400, how many state beats do we have in the country? 250. So, yeah. So I think, Chairperson, it's very important that we actually do get that. The next question is also linked to that, and that's one of the questions that we asked the state lawyer advisor, DG. It's a question on clarity, and it brings it back to this, because you've just said that we're going to give it to the provincial state beats. So it's a question of tagging. Because to me, if we're going to have the provinces and the state beats, and maybe it's because I don't know if the state beats fall under the province or the national, it will help us clarify that, because to me it sounds like we're going to give provincial officials work and then it will become a Section 76 bill. So we need to get clarification on that one. Then, Chairperson, the concern is the deadline of 12th July. I'm really very worried that we only got this bill back now after discussions in September last year. We're not going to make the deadline. I cannot see, we're moving into a process and something that we will discuss later, Chairperson, with ourselves. We're going into budget. We don't have a lot of dates to finalise this bill, even at this portfolio. So I'm worried that we got it very late again and that we will not make the deadline of 12th July. Then, Chairperson, the other question that I want to ask was on the question of now I can't get that section of the role of the minister and in the appeals and the board. It needs to be broken down a bit more. I think that section is not clear enough, so we need to get more information on that. I will just say at that for the moment. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the budget has already been referred to by my colleagues on either side of me. I'll just focus on one element here, and that is the extent of the consultative process. Of particular interest to me is the apparent limited input or exposure of the intended bill to the security companies. Now, the broad implications thereof are that, without doubt, being used security environment. The economy of the country can be very, very negatively affected. Companies rely on dogs to a very large extent. The same applies to police. Criminality in the country can be severely compromised. So this is where the agency in dealing with this matter becomes very, very central. So that those players in the security industry know exactly who is going to regulate, you know, the issuing of licenses so that they are not hampered. 12th of July is just a few days, virtually, you know. Now, I don't know if I know the maxim, the legal maxim that says ignorance of the law is no excuse. I don't know if it is sufficient, a consultative process, to say that I issued a notice in the Government Gazette and I expected the players, the affected players, to show interest when you know that the implications of the absence of animals to serve a secure premises, searching cars and so on, people, chasing people down the streets and so on, when you know the implications, I don't know if you would consider just the issuance of a public notice in a gazette to be sufficient and not direct, you know, something to those institutions to say, what's your comment on this? The other, so, and I'm not saying that they have not been approved, but just the documentation in front of us does not confirm specifically that they have been approached and what their input or response, you know, has been. Then we would like to get answers to that. As I say, this affects the criminality in the country, it affects the economy of the country. So I know those companies actually provide a little budget for thefts. And equally, they also provide a little budget to secure their premises and businesses. Second, the institutions that I appear to be relevant here are the Department of Science and Technology, as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs, just summarizing, you know. I don't know if they have been specifically approached for a comment or whether, you know, they showed their lack of interest, you know, in this. And I would like to leave, I would prefer to limit myself there to, you know, for the moment. But lastly, Chair, should we have an opportunity for a second bite, we'll just deal more deeply with the issue of the time constraints, which we know that as the legislatures, it is our primary function to make sure that there is enough legislation in the country to regulate the conduct of the citizens and everybody, you know, in the country. So it ultimately behoves us as this committee to try to fast-track the process so that this necessary piece of legislation finally sees the light of the day. So, but I would like to dedicate more time for that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Can we have a response?
Okay, I will ask, thank you. I will ask my colleagues to assist. In my view, we dealing with a ruling of the Constitutional Court, which has to be implemented. And so whether we have a budget or not, we have to make it happen. And so we have put the cost, the projected cost, my understanding of what it costs, and we have to make it happen. This is also the part of our work, section of our work, this particular branch, because it manages several pieces of legislation that also generates revenue. So besides our annual budget that we have, there's revenue that we get. This branch alone generates about 120 million per annum. And so in a way, some of the costs are offset. And I'm a little bit confused, Chair, because we made the very same presentation to this committee in September. And so this bill has been, or
has been in the process, because it is the Constitutional Court asked Parliament to ensure that the its decision is implemented. And we just had to go to enable Parliament. So I'm a little bit perplexed that now we are raising other issues around who should have been consulted, almost pushing it back, when this is there's something which the legislature should be doing. That, and also the July deadline. I mean, if the deadline can't be managed, then we change the deadline. But I think we have done our work. It was a went through the cabinet process, cabinet committee in December. Then, and the last time we had to explain to the Constitutional Court and attach an affidavit about why it was delayed. So I think Parliament must then assist us in saying why it is being delayed. And also to note that there are costs attached to it, but we will do as the House decides. The colleagues can speak about the issue of the regulations and the definitions, etc. And also maybe you want to comment on the vets and the where paravets will come in. Thank you.
Yeah, before that, I think let's deal with the response. Honourable Thursday.
Chairperson, I cannot believe what I'm hearing. DG, you are wrong. You did not bring this to the portfolio. The state law advisors brought it to us in September to inform us that there is this act that your department is not dealing with, and that there is a court case in front of us. So it was not your department. We then raised certain issues and asked the questions. We did not deal with the act as if we now are going to pass a piece of legislation and really looking at the implications and the technicalities that we need to do it. It's before us now for the first time from your department. So don't come and do and make it as if it's us. It has nothing to do with this portfolio. I'm really upset about this now. Exactly the same thing that we had in September. We sent the department back to say, please, we cannot let your department be in contempt of court. Change the date. Bring the thing back to us so that we can pass a piece of legislation. You change the date. Thank you for that. But if we had it back even in November or December so that we started with it last term, it's not our job. But I think, maybe, Chair, we must start making legislation. I'm going to speak to other people tomorrow about other pieces of legislation. There was a court case yesterday where the department has found in contempt of court again of not implementing acts that we passed. I'm really upset about this.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honourable Steyn. I don't think nobody in the community would be against what you are saying, because really it's really out of order. DG, I think before coming here, you should have done some work on this matter. Honourable Lucas.
Chairperson, I have mostly been covered, but really I want to say that we cannot tolerate arrogance walking into these committees if they have not done their work. We are here, we are looking at this bill, and we're really saying that this work has not been done before, and we've got to cover the loopholes. So we're standing up and we're fighting for the department to get legislation out there that is strong enough. But if indeed you take the minutes of a meeting of last year, we were fighting that for 18 months the department did nothing about it, number one. Number two, if we took the minutes, we said that the minister, the deputy minister, we've all agreed that this cannot be a section 75. It's got to be a 76. But you've ignored whatever this committee said. And the arrogance has gone back and just decided we will implement what we want to implement. These type of things, we came here in good faith today. And I'm hoping that the department itself wants to change the attitude and come here with good faith.
Thank you very much, members. Do you want to deal with other questions?
there were questions that were posed, starting with Honorable Carter, where she was requesting for clear definitions around a definition of any animal in terms of the Act, and raising issues around pigeon raising in terms of bulls at the show and the like, and what is for profit. I think, Honorable Chair, the issue that we are going to raise here was that in terms of the current amendments that were made to the Act, it was a response to the constitutional ruling. And that finds its premise in terms of saying magistrates cannot be issuing the licenses, and therefore it should move from judiciary into administration, and the department has to deal with it. So the changes that you would see in terms of the Act would strategically deal with sections 2 and section 3 of the Act, and any consequential definition that would have been in terms of those areas. We are, as a department, looking at the amendment of the whole area in terms of animal welfare. And we are going to have an animal welfare bill that encapsulates the Animal Protection Act and the Performing Animals Protection Act. And that is the next level in terms of articulation, these issues that we need to bring in. And I totally agree in terms of substance to say that if you have got to look at the current meaning of the Performing Animal Protection Act, you look at an animal, it would have a very broad definition. However, in terms of the crux of the issue, goes to what we are trying to remedy in terms of the constitutional ruling. When Dr. Songabe was introducing the topic, he was saying that we had three options in terms of looking at the aspect. And one of the aspects was to, within the very same 18 months, look at the broad kind of reconfiguration of the Act within the animal protection sphere or the animal welfare sphere. And we took this option just to look at Section 2 and 3 of the Act based on the legislation and issuing licenses as the central point of our input. The issue in terms of the permit, the movement permit that has been there, and attending to this permit as asked by Honorable Carter, is also central to the very same kind of argument that we are having from a perspective of what are we trying to remedy. It was the issue around the magistrate. We agree with her notion in terms of finding what is at fault with the current act that we are enacting, and we agree in terms of that. However, in terms of the current way that we are dealing with it, we are actually looking at sections 2 and 3, and it's by default or by trying to refine the definitions that would have not been catered for in the old act that we have brought up new definition. It's only in terms of responding to what we said in terms of 2 and 3. 3D and 3H, Madam, Honorable Carter, we will look at those. I think it's something that we will look at. The issue around tagging is a legal issue, and we would appreciate in terms of the parliamentary processes if that can be cleared out to say whether it's 75 or 76. But in terms of the tagging that was there, when this bill was consulted, there were reasons that were forwarded from the legal point of view that are in the object of the Act that motivated for Section 75, but we are to be guided by Parliament on that. Honorable Stein, in absentia, there were a few issues that were raised to say, in practice, how does this work in terms of the right that is there? And I think DG has reiterated the issue to indicate that there is a constitutional ruling. We have got to make do and reprioritize within the department in terms of how are we going to implement this. For now, in terms of the arrangements, we will have to deal with the current situation that we are dealing with. But in the outer years, what we are going to do is to motivate to have the 54 million that we have outlined that would assist us in terms of ushering it in, taking into cognizance the budget cuts that we are having. We would look at that deadline and stand to be guided in terms of this. And the process has unfolded, and I think that we had said it in September, that the bill first had to go through the economic sectors, infrastructure and economic sectors, infrastructure and infrastructure development cluster, employment and infrastructure development cluster. of DGs. And this was ushered in on the 1st of October 2014, and from there the process unfolded until here today. I think it's that level of independence in terms of the processes of government that we appreciate that it has to go outside of the department, but that's how we find ourselves here, that it came through from the cabinet into the portfolio committee. That's how it went, but we reiterated that from our side it was approved from the economic sectors, employment and infrastructure development, DG's cluster on the 1st of October. And yes, and cabinet approved it in December in the process. I think there was an issue that was set by MESTAID for us to start looking at the role of the minister versus the board. I think it's something that we can see. Mm-hmm. And Honorable Filipani, there was an issue around the consultative process that maybe we would have broadened it to really go to the security industry like that. Yes, we have got to accept that the consultation is never enough in terms of you going out there, but we have closely tried to bring in different views in terms of that. And we would like to even indicate that the views in terms of what we published in last year in September 14 is quite different to the product that we are currently having in terms of the consultation, trying to bring in and bring policy views into perspective. In terms of DEA and DST, in terms of government processes, sitting at the very same cluster, they sitting at the cluster, and certain things would be there, but we would also take note of the articulation that comes from another member. I will then, with permission from the DG, request Dr. Songabe to deal with the technical amendments that are there that were not covered. Thank you.
Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honorable members. I will just take a few of those that Mr. Ramaswamy has specifically not touched. Honorable Carter, I think there is a concern as to what is exempted, who is exempted, and so on. And as rightfully so, Mr. Ramaswamy indicated, the current amendment was really just looking at Section 2 and Section 3. And what our thinking was that because it's only those sections that have been questioned their constitutionality, we will look only at those. The remaining sections within the Act will remain applicable in that regard. So in the principal Act itself, while it was talking about the animals, the Act that we are amending in Section 9 specifically, it had a list of who is exempted and so on. And therefore, that list on the principal Act will remain valid with this amendment. So if we were amended, we're trying to make very minor changes, the one in Section 2 and Section 3. If in the principal Act you were exempted, you will remain exempted. So we will bring you. So all those are clearly defined and clearly clarified in as far as Section 9 is concerned. So those will be the only ones that are already included in that regard. And then again, the issue of the definition of any animal, I think it's something that Mr. Ramaswamy has already indicated that we need to attend to it and so on. At the present moment, we are using the definition that is already in the Principal Act, which is consistent with the definition that is in the Animal Protection Act. And therefore, at the moment, whenever we say animal, we will be talking to those definitions that are already in the Principal Act. Nothing new, nothing we're trying to add. Then, honorable members, when it comes to the regulations, I must really take this opportunity to just give you a brief up that while we were working on the Principal Act, it became necessary because this Section 2 and Section 3, they also had the old regulation. Mm-hmm. So by the virtue of that, those regulations will be affected with the new Act. And what we did then, we started drafting regulations, and like any regulation, it must first be an internal process that we do on our own, and then put it out there for comments and so on. And I think we are looking forward to the stakeholder comments on everything in that regard that we will be able to improve. And the only reason why we started publishing them, we realized that even if the Act is to be finished and signed on the 11th of July, for example, we will still not be able to put it in action on the 12th of July without the regulations. So we decided then that we'll continue to do them in parallel, and then if there are any changes in the Act that we are amending, we will immediately factor those into the regulations. The purpose is just to make sure that we don't run behind times when the Parliament has completed and there's an Act out there, but it can't be put into operation because the regulations are not there. So I wish maybe not to get into the details then with what is on the regulations now, and maybe through the permission of the DG to request the House that at a certain stage when we have done extensive consultation outside with the regulations, we can then come and brief the Honourable Member on the regulations and why certain things are there and so on. And hopefully with the issues of the fees and the movement permits and so on, we would have already dealt and got some views even from the stakeholders as to what extent will they be affected by those. So I would request them to deal with that on a specific session that we can just deal with the regulation. And Honourable Stain in absentia has made concerns about where the state web office is, where are they, and whether they will be accessible and so on. I think, Honourable Members, our thinking is that the whole South Africa, regardless of its province, each area has got a state vet, there is a state vet area. So the entire country, if you are to put it on the map, you will see exactly where the state vets are. I understand that in certain towns, the state vet is not on that town, but is on another town, but covering three towns. But on that particular town, there is an office of an animal health technician. So the way the network is that it's the whole country made into various state vet areas and then sub-made into where there is no state vet, but there is an animal health technician office. So we are of the view that just when the clients normally go and apply for exercise and so on, in principle, the state vet system will be able to provide adequate coverage in that regard. I think that Ramasodi has dealt with the tagging honorable members. I will not touch it again. Honorable Fultana, I will just again reiterate what Dr. Ramasodi has already indicated in the extent of the consultation process. It is true that indeed, by the virtue of just throwing it into a government, that it's not enough. That is why we try to issue the press statement. That's why we issued some radio adverts. That's why we issued some TV adverts. But again, to what extent have people seen them? With regard to the security industry, I'm just looking at the attendance of the 16th of May. You can see there are some associations that deal with the security dogs and so on. There are some that deal with security, SADA access security dogs and so on. So there are some that we reach. But I think we have said that maybe we can do more, and maybe the team behind me, we can even look at the options of the road shows about this Act, and just make sure that we try and think about everyone and everyone who can deal with that. I think that I have then covered all what has not been covered yet. Thank you.
Honorable Chair. Just in addition, there was a request that was made that in terms of all regulations that have got to be consulted, if the parliamentary committee would be advised, we committed that we would do that in terms of the regulations that we have. Thank you very much.
The people who are going to make presentations, DG, for plans and what? Improvement, yeah. Where are they coming from? Where are they from? Are they from Cape Town or Pretoria? I'm raising this because at 2 o'clock we won't have power. And we have a challenge of a small room. I don't know how far can you go with what we are discussing now, which is very important. Because we can't let people sit there from Pretoria and they go back without doing anything. I think it will be fruitless exchange. Are you coming with a suggestion, Honorable Chase?
No, I'm good. Just one question.
Okay, just hold it there. Because I want us to solve this problem. Because by 2 o'clock, one power here. Honorable President.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for your response to my suggestions.
I'm not on that. I'm proposing that we look at how we can rearrange.
I'm trying to wrap it up, Chair.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to, I'm pretty much on your side.
Okay.
Chair, I think we can wrap it up by saying, now that the department has had our concerns on this, given that it's admitted that it's the first time that it's brought here, and an alternate, so I do miss some of the meetings, so I didn't know what happened in September. Let them go back and effect these amendments and implement what they've undertaken, you know, to do, together with the actual content of the comments that were made by the parties that are listed here. Because the presentation just says so many institutions were consulted, but we're not being told by the department what those comments were. We don't know how many people objected in which way, and then they come back. Now, about the question of time, perhaps we could use an instrument of public hearing, and then we get invited, and we get over and done with it. I don't want us to have a legal vacuum in the country. It's dangerous. So that would be the deadline of the 12th of July.
Okay.
Thank you.
Honorable Cut? just help us, just help me, members, on dealing with the matter of the time and the power that won't be had.
I made a proposal earlier on, but I don't think it was accepted.
Yeah.
We just think that I think that the agenda today was to talk about it.
Can we take this? Because I want those people to come and present to us. Can we take this? Because we're meeting again on the 25th of April to finalize, take this recommendation of Honorable Fultan. And then have the people to present, and then on the 25th we'll come back and finalize what the response is and what they must do in the meantime. They can come back next week. Honorable Carter, and then we'll proceed.
Jay, it's two very quick items. Okay, well, the first one is, I'm a little bit perturbed and disturbed about the fact that we are now saying that we dealt with item 2 and 3 only. If we go to the minutes of a meeting, we can recall that the minister and the deputy minister in our portfolio committee will ask something. We cannot deal with this piecemeal, specifically because of those issues of definitions and whatever. So it's quite disturbing that we are still saying that even after the committee says we can't deal with it piecemeal and only work on 2 and 3. That's why we proposed the extension, to make sure that we deal with the whole one. So really the whole act. Just another one is where I really want to just make a plea to the department, and this is my last item. We've all got all the stakeholders that attended to do. Why were these people not just send an email or SMS or a letter to say, listen, it has been published. Here's regulation. We have published it. No one has received it. So I just think that we need to look at how we communicate. And then we can deal with the rest of the matters on the meeting of the 21st. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mangum.
Thank you, Chairperson. With the resolution that has been put forward, I just thought I need to add this one point, Chairperson, which the department must as well look at with the permission of the committee. Looking at the long title of Chairperson, I think they need to refocus at both the long title of the Principal Act, which basically says it is meant to regulate the exhibition and training of performing animals and the use of dogs for safeguarding. But if you look at the long title for the bill, a certain provision there, it says, is to provide for a procedure for the application for a license to exhibit, to train, or use of an animal for safeguarding. So there's a bit of confusion there and a change in what the other meant and the other is seeming to achieve. So maybe if they can also look at that for purposes of what is being suggested. Thank you, Chair.
All right.
It's just, you know, I think just in general that we must have the presentation that we had from our research site, that there should just be consultation with the department because we've agreed with all the input and we just need to communicate it to the department.
That's illegal. That's illegal. That's the research is ours. Yeah. Presentations now, because we will round up all what we have discussed later. Who is going to make a presentation on what is the first one on the agenda? Oh, plant improvement bill and plant resource bill. Which one are we? The one who is going to do plant breeders bill?
Julian Yatsa.
who will lead the discussion on both plant improvement and the plant breeders.
Thank you, plant breeders, yes, Ms. Chairperson. Thank you, DG, and thank you to the Chairperson and honorable members. The two presentations are obviously linked, and the linkage will be clarified as the presenters make the presentation. The presentations have been structured in such a way to give an overview of the landscape of plant breeders' rights as well as plant improvement. It focuses on the development of the two bills, and it also then outlines in the respective chapters what are the major amendments and what the respective chapters deals with. It then ends with implementation issues, and it also outlines clearly the consultation processes. I have with me Nolothando Nedna Mkhwana. She is currently the registrar who is the administrator provided for within the Plant Breeders' Rights, the current Plant Breeders' Rights Act, and she's also the director for genetic resources, the unit in which this piece of legislation is administered in. So if you're ready, Chair, we can start with the presentation. Okay, sure. Thank you.
Do we have the presentation on that?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Good day, everyone. This is just to give the content of the presentation. And this is just to give the acronym that you are going to be using. DUS, which means distinctness, uniformity, and stability. A PBR, which refers to plant breeders' rights. UPOV refers to the International Convention for the Protection of New Varieties of Plants, of which South Africa is a member. Now, we might know that people breed new plant varieties for various reasons. They breed plants to get higher yields or better product quality, for instance a tomato that can have a longer shelf life, or plants that have better resistance to plant pests and diseases. Now, breeding these new plant varieties, they take a long time. It can take up to 15 years. And also takes a lot of investment. Millions of rands are spent in breeding new plant varieties. Therefore, we need to give incentives to breeders of new plant varieties. And also, to copy the new plant varieties can take just a year, although the breeder took more than 7 years. So a plant breeder's right is a form of intellectual property right that is granted to breeders of these new plant varieties. We are having an example of what we mean by a plant variety. If you go to a shop, Pick and Pay or Woolies, you will see different types of apples or different types of potatoes. Like there, you have three types of potato varieties. Fiana, which is very popular, was bred mainly for French fries, mashing and roasting. The other one, Lady Rosetta, was bred just for mashing and baking, and Marimba for boiling and roasting. So these are the types of varieties that you are referring to. They are bred for different varieties, for different reasons. Now, in South Africa, these plant breeders' rights are protected under the Plant Breeders' Rights Act. That is the current act. And this act provides for the requirements for the granting of such rights, the scope of protection, and the granting of licenses. And our act in South Africa is based on the International Protection of New Plant Varieties, which is UPOV. South Africa Africa became the 10th member of UPOF in 1977, so we have been a member of this international convention for a long time. And we are bound by the UPOF 1978. And South Africa is participating in this convention in various ways. We had chairmanship of two technical working parties. We are lead experts in developing some test guidelines. And we also sell our variety description to other UPOF member countries. Now, one may ask, why do we need plant variety protection in our country? We need it for various reasons. One, breeders of new plant varieties are reluctant to release their new plant varieties in countries that do not have protection. As I have mentioned, because it's easy to copy, and also they won't have return on their investment. Also, the economic benefits, because we get higher yields, we have better product quality, and also because that when you have a new plant variety and you are granted a plant breeder's right, you can obtain royalties. Also, for environmental benefits, because some of the plants like the Proteaceae, they are harvested in the wild. So with breeding new plant varieties, we can actually help in conserving species that are in the wild. In developing this new bill, we have consulted extensively, starting from 2011, since the publication of the bill for public comment. We've also realized that through our consultations, we don't get comments from the smallholder farmers, and as such, we held provincial workshops in Eastern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, Western Cape, to get feedback from mostly the smallholder farmers. The bill was also pre-certified in 2013, but we continued with consultations up until 2014, and then in 2015 we obtained the certification from the state law advisors. When developing the bill, the principal legislation was taken into account as well as the constraints with the implementation of the current bill. We also recognize the importance of new plant varieties to support the sustainable agricultural production. And also we recognize the role that breeders play in developing these new plant varieties, acknowledging the investment that is needed in developing of such varieties, and the need to provide incentives, but mostly the importance of balancing the needs of farmers and the breeders. Looking at the overview of the plant breeders' rights, we will just mention those sections that are at the essence of the bill. For instance, the breeder, the definition of the breeder is very important because it is the breeder that we are providing protection for. So most importantly is that the breeder can be anyone. It can be an individual, it can be a farmer, it can be a researcher, public institution, or a private company. These are just, as Dr. Jaffa has explained, just to show the chapters that are captured in the bill, and we just mentioned the important parts in each chapter. In this chapter, Section 6 of the current bill provides for instances where we need to identify what will constitute confidential information, because the current act does not really explain what will constitute confidential information, and as such, that is left to the discretion of the registrar. And then in Section 7, gives us the scope of the bill. What is it that we are protecting? And Section 7 just illustrates that anyone who wants to perform those activities, who wants to multiply a protected variety, who wants to sell a protected variety, wants to export a protected variety, that person will need to get a license from the breeder. So the scope of protection is those activities, and anyone who wants to perform those activities must obtain a license from the breeder of the variety. And then we also show how long the breeder, the protection lasts is for 20 to 30 years, depending on the variety in question. However, although we have that scope, there are exceptions where a person does not need an authorization or a license from the breeder. And what are those exceptions? We have an exception that is referred to as a breeder's exemption. What it means is, although a variety is protected, if anyone wants to use that protected variety to breed...
Sorry, Chair. Excuse me.
Yes.
This is that I'm a new MP. I don't know whether it is an acceptable practice, if this is the first time this proposed bill is brought to us, to skip certain sections. I don't want to challenge the existing protocol, but I'm just a little bit concerned that we seem to be flying. Is it because of time constraints? I don't want us to be embarrassed later and referred to that committee that passed the bill without actually understanding exactly what every word means. Thank you.
Well, since it's a briefing, and then we will summarize ourselves. So, just a helicopter view of it. It's very necessary, but I think it's doing it very well.
Thank you. On the exception, thank you, sir. On the exceptions, one is the breeder's exemption, where it allows a person to breed a variety from a protected variety without obtaining a license. Also, if you are performing X done for experimental purposes, you just have a rose garden, you are an amateur gardener, you don't need authorization from the breeder for such. And if you are a subsistence farmer, you are just using a protected variety for your own use, then you don't need an authorization from the breeder. And most importantly, one exception is what is referred to as farmer's privilege. This refers to the ancient practice of farmers who keep back their seed to plant in the next season. So such farmers are exempted in this regard. They don't need to have an authorization from the breeder. However, the farmer's privilege has evolved over the years. When the South Africa first got the Plant Breeders' Rights Act in 1977, the act implied that farmers were allowed to keep back the seed and also to exchange such seed with their neighbors. But then, in 1996, the act was revised. And through that revision, farmers were no longer allowed to exchange seed with their neighbors because they were only allowed to keep back the seed and use it in their own holdings, and hence they were prohibited to exchange the seed amongst themselves. That was the 1996 amendment. And then we realized that the provision as it stands was criticized both by the farmers and the breeders because, one, it did not explain the farmer we are talking about. Which farmer are we allowing to keep back the seed? As a result, it was alleged that even commercial farmers were keeping back the seed to the detriment of some industries. So with the current bill, the farmer's privilege provision was revised so that we give the minister, we allow the minister to prescribe the categories of farmers that will benefit from the farmer's privilege provision, which plants are we talking about, and also what kind of uses will be attached to the seed that will be kept back by the farmers. And where applicable, we prescribe the conditions for payment of royalties and also for the labeling requirements. So that's the main change from the 1996 Act and the current amendment in the bill that's in front of us. And then in chapter 2, it's what is the transfer's right? When does it get exhausted? The joint holders of transfer's right, and also that the state is bound by a transfer's right. In chapter 3, it gives the conditions under which the transfer's right will be granted. It will be granted for all higher plans if that variety is new, distinct, uniform, and stable. So to be granted a plant breeder's right, it must conform to those conditions. Just to give an overview of how the system works, the registrar will receive an application for a plant breeder's right from a breeder. The first thing that will be checked is novelty, meaning that is this plant variety new? Meaning that if it has been sold in South Africa for a year, you can't come and say the variety is new because now it's in common knowledge. Or if it was sold in other countries for 4 years for annuals or for 6 years for trees. So if it's new, we check, have you provided us with the name? That is what we refer to as a variety denomination. And so you saw from at the shop, you will see that an apple is called Golden Delicious or is called Pink Lady. So that is the denomination that we are referring to. If the variety is new, it has a variety denomination, the information on the form is complete, then we accept the application, the applicant is informed, and this information is published quarterly so that the public can see what kind of applications we are receiving for plant breeders' rights. Now, if we accept the application, the breeder must also provide us with seed or propagating material so that we can now check if this plant is distinct. It does not look like other plants that we know of, if it's uniform or if it's stable. And if it is distinct, uniform, and stable, we approve that particular variety. We grant a PBR, we issue a certificate to the breeder, and we publish the information. But if it does not conform with only one of those conditions, then it's not approved. The PBR is refused, the applicant is informed, and we publish. And on that process, there's a possibility for anyone to object or to appeal against the decision of the registrar. In chapter 3, we give the varieties in respect in which this must be granted, and what was now inserted is in section 16, is that in the event that a variety may not be used without prior approval in terms of other legislation, the application must be accompanied by the relevant permit or general release in terms of such legislation. This, ladies and gentlemen, is for instances, for example, when a breeder uses an indigenous plant to develop a new plant variety. So that breeder must comply with other legislation like the Biodiversity Act. So what we are saying, if that's the case, when you are applying for plant breeder's rights, attach a permit that shows that you have complied also with the Biodiversity Act. And then the other sections in this chapter deal with the redating of applications, for instance, and when do we reject an application, when do we accept an application, how and when can we amend an application, and also the process for the objection for a plant breeder's right. Chapter 4 deals with the variety denominations. As I explained, you must provide a variety denomination. Now, and there are instances where such a denomination can be amended, and the key requirement is that when you sell that variety, the denomination must be visible in a packet so that the public can know what kind of variety that they are buying. Chapter 5 deals with the examination of variety and grants of plant breeders' rights. Currently, the requirement is the breeder must provide us with the plant material within 12 months of application. Now we've realized that this is not practical for all crops, because in terms of trees, for instance, it can take up to 7 years to get a tree ready to be evaluated. So we are saying we will make a provision where the plant, the period for providing plant material will vary in accordance to the crop concern. So for annual crops, we can say it's 12 months provide us with plant material, but for trees, we can say, for instance, the potato industry has requested that they be given 5 years to provide material for evaluation. Then there's a provision for the refusal as well as the grant of plant product rights. I have mentioned that there's a possibility to object. So chapter 6 just gives how the hearing of the objection will take place. And in chapter 7 is the obligation of a plant, of the holder of the plant product right, where they are required to pay annual fees to maintain the right, and also they are obliged to maintain the propagating material for the whole duration of the plant breeder's right. Chapter 8 deals with enforcement of the plant breeder's right in instances where there's an infringement of such a right, and provides for the remedies thereof. We also provide for the granting of licenses where a third party would like to use the protected varieties. But most importantly, we also provide for a compulsory license. And in this instance, we highlight the fact that that compulsory license must be granted if that plant variety is in the public interest. Chapter 10 deals with the termination of the plant preserve right, because although the period of protection can be up to 30 years, the plant preserve right can get terminated through various means. It can expire at the end of the period, or it can be cancelled by the registrar, or the breeder himself can surrender that particular plant breeder's right. So what we have done this time, we have made it clear that should the plant breeder's right be terminated, it is now in the public domain, because we have had instances where when the plant breeder's right is surrendered by a breeder, then you get another person wanting to come and apply for the same plant breeder's right. So we're saying no, if it's now surrendered, it's in the public domain, anyone can freely use it without the license from the breeder. Chapter 11 provides for the appeals, where we are asking for the appeal board to be appointed in instances where there's an appeal against the registrar. So this appeal board only sits during that time that there's an appeal, and it's paid in accordance to National Treasury regulations. We are also proposing the establishment of an advisory committee. The reason being that the issues around plant variety protection are getting more complex. Plant taxonomy, we get nomenclatural changes all the time. There are new breeding techniques, and also in terms of legal principles. And as such, we feel that the registrar alone sometimes cannot make decisions without getting advice from other experts. So we are proposing that an advisory committee be established to advise the registrar, and again, this will not be a permanent body. They will sit only when needed by the registrar. And there's a proposal of who should be members of that advisory committee. And then the other sections are just the general provisions. I think the new one there is section 47 that deals with the instances where other countries request South Africa to provide them with our DUS test results. And the others are general provisions, and there are not much changes there. And in terms of implementation, we already have two evaluation firms. These firms are the one who perform those tests, the distinctness, uniformity and stability tests. We have one situated here in Stellenbosch and another one in Rode Plaat in Pretoria. Also, we're proposing that we will have to amend the regulations to give effect to these provisions. The appointment of an advisory board will follow the process of calling for nominations, and they will be appointed by the minister. Through our consultation, we realized that not many people are aware of even the existence of the Blind Readers' Rights Act, and we are proposing that we have an awareness program on the Blind Readers' Rights Act. This is just to show the statistics of the ownership of the Blind Readers' Rights. It depends on crops, because sometimes people will just say, no, most of these are owned by foreigners. This is just to show that that depends on crop by crop basis. There are crops that are of interest in South Africa, like the sweet potato is mainly owned by South African companies, and they in turn will license to overseas companies. And then there are crops that are mostly where the foreigners are mostly interested in, like if you look at the roses are mostly owned by foreigners. And also, this is just to show that not every variety in South Africa is a protected variety. For food crops, for instance, you can see that in soya bean, 55 will have PVR, 18 will not have PVR. Maize, 326 varieties will have PVR, and 273 won't have PVR. What it means is those that are now without PVR, they are freely available. Anyone can use them. You don't need a license. You don't need any authorization. They are freely available. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I will now advocate my position. Fortunately, it was not a hot slip. I will make it a hot slip.
Jefferson, with your indulgence, can we go, if it's fine, but can we go to the plant improvement one, because the two are linked, and then we can take questions from for both. Thank you. I'm also aware, Jefferson, of the time constraint, and therefore Mr. Mashala will not go into detail already covered by the registrar.
Thank you, Chairperson and DJ, honorable members and colleagues. As already indicated, the two bills are interlinked, so we'll try also to just highlight the helicopter view of this particular bill, which is called the Plan Improvement Bill. All right, with the acronyms, my colleague Nolikando has already touched on this, so we'll not go that again. We'll use the same acronyms. And then, as a form of introduction, the concept of plant improvement has been practiced for thousands of years. Many of the well-known crops today were taken from the wild and domesticated by communities and farmers for many decades. And then as such, through many years, they were able to select the better varieties. And then as years goes by, again, there were also issues of breeding that were also used to try to, as already indicated with the plant breeders' rights, to breed new varieties. So the issues is, in terms of the growing population and climate change and disease pressure, it is important to develop improved varieties all the time so that you are able to continue to produce food and then again to produce raw materials for the manufacturing sector. So the core weight in this bin is what we call propagation material, which is the foundation of our agricultural production. So this is particularly referred to the seed, the cuttings, or any other thing that you can use to produce another plant. So the in terms of the objectives of the bill, the purpose of plant improvement legislation is to regulate the quality of plants and propagation material intended for cultivation and sale by means of the following: registration of types of businesses and premises that are involved in the cultivation and sale of these, all the businesses that are involved in the selling of seeds or seedlings or any material that you use to propagate need to be registered in terms of this. And then secondly, it makes provision for national listing of plant varieties. So the all the varieties that are sold in the country need to be registered and be on this list. So there is a process that I will shed light to on how we do that. And again, this provides for the conditions of sale, fiscal quality standards, as well as labeling for plants and propagation material. And then again, it makes provision for controlling of import and export of plants and propagation material. And then lastly, it makes provision for the establishment of what we call improvement schemes. These schemes are established to ensure that we uphold standards and ensure that the materials that are used in the sector are of good quality so that production yields will continue to be high so that we can meet the requirements of the population in the country. Right. In this slide, it gives a summary of what this act is all about. Like I've indicated, the core issue is propagation material, which is the one in the center. And then in terms of this, if we have to start from the left, right on the top is that we, like I indicated, provision of registration of businesses that are involved in the selling and as well as cleaning and testing of propagation material. Secondly, the formation of the certification schemes. And then again, also as well as export control, which then goes into foreign markets. And then again, propagation material, they also, if we have to get, start from the other side, registration of varieties, and then again, which again involves an element of DUS that Nolutando introduced. Sorry, I don't know what happened here. All right, and then the quality control as well as import control. Next slide here, on this slide we try to illustrate the process that is followed in registration of the varieties. Firstly, for those varieties that come from other countries and they are imported into the country, then an application must be made to the registrar for plant improvement, who is in my unit, and then the registrar will then assess the application and ensure that all the required documents are there, and then again the applicable fees and tariffs have been paid. And then on the other hand, we'll come back to that one, for local varieties again, the same process, you apply to the registrar, then there's an assessment, and then after this assessment, a decision is taken by the registrar whether to accept the application. This is not approval, just to accept your application or to reject. And then in both ways, whether you are accepted or rejected, the applicant must be notified of the decision of the registrar. And then once it has been accepted, then it is sent to the evaluation center to perform the DUS trials, like it has been indicated with the plant breeders, right?
Then at the evaluation center, as already indicated, there are two evaluation centers in the country, one here in Stellenbosch and one in Rooiplaas in Pretoria. And then at these centers, the sample that has been submitted together with the application is then put through a process. This basically means planting it for a number of seasons, two or three seasons, depending on the type of crop. And then during this process, it is scrutinized to ensure that it complies with the requirements. And then out of it, if it doesn't comply, then it is rejected. And if it complies, then it is approved. And then the applicant will be notified. And then now, for those that have been approved, then they are entered into the national variety list. In the next slide, I try to indicate that in terms of the work and this particular legislation, it has international obligations. We are members of what you call International Seed Testing Association, which provides for standardized seed testing methods for germination and purity, quality management standards, and as well as to allow South Africa to issue what we call international certificates that go with the seeds or propagation material that are exported to other countries. So we've been a member of these from 1955, and then we get audited every 3 years. Up to this stage, we have passed all the audits. And then the next organization is OECD. The South African seed certification is OECD compliant. We've been participating in the OECD schemes for some time. And then this makes it possible for South African seed to be recognized internationally. And then we are also members of the International Convention for Protection of New Varieties, UCOF, as indicated by my colleague. They have made provision for national listing requirements for GIS. So that is how we had to ensure that we comply internationally. And then in terms of the bill, it went through that process as already indicated with the existing legislation, that we looked at the existing legislation and then went through it and ensure that we did have a rigorous consultation process to ensure that we consult all stakeholders, and then the number of workshops that were held as indicated there. And then again, we consulted the provinces, we consulted the National House of Traditional Leaders, and then all of these were incorporated. And again, through this consultation process, we ensure that we try to cater for all the views that were expressed by stakeholders. And then the next stage was the pre-certification. The state law advisors have made comments on the bill, and then they looked into all the consultations and issues raised there, and then again, at the end of it, they didn't find any conflicts with the Constitution or other government legislation. So now the final bill has been certified by the state law advisors. And then the major shortcomings in the current legislation that we had to deal with when amending this, when developing the bill, we looked at the current bill, which is the Act of 1976. In that, because it's an old legislation, it didn't cater for recent developments, it was outdated. And then again, the penalties and the enforcement were not effective. Actually, the legislation was deemed to be toothless, and the penalties were very ridiculous, very, very low. And then we had to deal with emerging problems in the seed industry, like this issue of farm seed where farmers keep seed on their farm for the next season. But again, there's also another one which is called the brown bag sales, where farmers then started selling seed to other farmers in the vicinity, which again threatens the holders of the intellectual property rights, that is the breeders.
Again, there is also a difficulty in facilitating the participation of smallholder farmers in the current certification scheme. So the current act was made to make provision for participation by commercial farmers. So we had to amend it to ensure that smallholder farmers can participate. And the other issue is the current act is too cumbersome, and that's very, very difficult to read. So we had to simplify it and make it easy to read. So in short, we will not go into detail, but in short, Chapter 1 will deal with the application of the bill, Chapter 2, the registrar, the administration, Chapter 3 deals with the registration of the businesses and premises, as I've indicated. The Chapter 4 deals with the conditions of sale, that is the requirements that need to be complied with. Chapter 5 deals with the national variety list and the processes thereof. Chapter 6, the application, and to say who is eligible and what is the procedure, and how do you object if you're not happy. And then again, the variety determinations, Chapter 7. Chapter 8 deals with evaluation for distinctiveness, uniformity, and stability, DUIS. That is where there is also a relationship with the plant breeder's rights, because both use this process. Chapter 9 is specific to this particular bill, something we call value for cultivation and use. We actually incorporate this through our participation in the OECD seed schemes, because most countries that are participating there make this a requirement that if you want to trade with them, you need also to have this particular aspect. We didn't have it in the old legislation. Chapter 10 deals with the hearings of objections. Chapter 11, the National Variety List Journal, that is published on a regular basis. Chapter 12, the inspections and the processes thereof. Chapter 13, import and export of plants and propagation material. Chapter 14 deals with the schemes and how they are established. And then Chapter 15, the appeals and the procedures thereof. Chapter 16, advisory committee. Just like with the other bill, again, we have made provision for the establishment of the advisory committee. This is a body that is an ad hoc body that advises the registrar to try to ensure that the work of the registrar is enhanced. And then Chapter 17 is general provisions. Right, and then the last part of the presentation, the implementation. As already indicated, we have the two evaluation farms in the country at Rio Plata and Cerebos that are there. Secondly, we have the official seed certification, which is internationally accredited by International Seed Testing Association, ISTA, which is at Rio Plata. Like I said, we get audited every 3 years, and thus far we have passed all the audits. Next one is the amendment of the regulations. Will be done in the current financial year, provided we this bill get processed. And then again, the next one is the appointment of the advisory board will follow. And then the next thing is the systems for registration of the premises is in place and is working. And then the National Inspection Services are also in place to ensure that enforcement takes place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are the two presentations, and before the power goes off, I'd like to say that on Tuesday next week, 21st is next week, we'll have to get the comprehensive responses from the department on the legislation. Remember, there were so many issues that were raised. So if when we meet, we can have those responses. I think that's the major one. Even if the presenters are not here,
surely the department will have to deal with the issues that you have raised or questions that will be raised to you. So DG, you have that responsibility, even if they are not here in our meeting next week. Can I take a question on these two presentations? Honorable Fulton.
On the first presentation, I think on page 12, we try to list a number of a variety of persons.
The first presentation.
Yeah. A variety of persons. But the moment with the data with legislation, the moment you do that, you almost on the precipice of automatically excluding certain persons. So my suggestion would be that just say legal persona, because that appears to be where you're headed for, you know, rather than say this type of person. That, but if this changes the intention that you had in mind, then you can discard my suggestion. But if the intention was to incorporate so many, just say legal persona, because whether you say it's a legal entity or a natural person, that's what you want to cover, if I understand your intention well.
Tell me, which one is that on page 12?
It says overview of the plan breeders right here.
Yes.
And then tries to define, if I understand the context well, what a breeder is, if I understand the context well. And then says an individual, a farmer, a researcher, public institution, private company. These last two, those are legal persona. This is a corporate body. An individual, a farmer, researcher, you're referring there to natural persons. That's why I say, instead of listing all those, because someone who is not a researcher could very well qualify to be a breeder, if they meet the requirements, although they are not registered as researchers, which is what I was referring to when I said, once you specify, you're running the risk of unintentionally excluding certain persons. But when you say legal persona who meet the requirements, you say that person is a breeder. This could be a moot point. You may want to discuss or disagree with me, but that's my viewpoint.
Okay.
Something to think about. And on page 19, I have got a question there. It's not so significant, but it's somewhat important. Do you publish the results? Sorry, I must have missed that point. And then on page 28, because earlier in your presentation, you said these rights can be passed on to the next generation, like your child or something like that, can be willed. Now, what about a situation where a person has this right, and on the 29th year of its existence, they will it to the next person? What determines the expiry of the right? Is it because it was with me for 30 years, or is it because I've willed it to the next person? And for how long can the successor or the beneficiary, you know, still hold it? Can they extend their right of ownership for another 30 years? That's why you need to look at that intricacy as to whether the intention of the legislation that you're proposing was to make sure that you terminate this at the end of 30 years. Because someone could be clever enough to say, right, 2 days before this turns 30, you know, this right has been with them for 30 years, they will it to their son. That's extending their ownership, as it were. They were right. Just look at that to see, you know what you intended to do. I'm not changing your mind. I'm just, you know, trying to indicate to you some potential loopholes when it comes to the application of the law, you know, in a court. And
to the on to page 29, where you've got a very admirable list of potential members of the committee. There's some influence from marketing background. I'm jealous that you know, when you do not. We're talking here about something with an economic value. But in the list of potential members of the advisors, you don't have someone who comes typically from an economic background. I see the farmer as a producer. Maybe someone with an economic background who will look after the economic interests and value of what you're trying to protect so that they can advise the minister appropriately. I see you've got a legal advisor, someone with private law and so on, commercial law. That's the kind of qualification one would need to have there. And I'm mindful of the last presentation, but I wrote this question before the last presentation was made. What about medicinal plants? This question may fall away if it's covered in the last presentation. I'm asking this because I know that in places like Rabaha, Willow Bay, down in the Eastern Cape, there are many, many well-recognized medicinal plants. And particularly a case was very much in the media about 5-10 years ago, where in Alice, in the Eastern Cape, Germans, I don't want to say they stole somebody's right, but I'm sure if you've been in this game for more than 10 years, you would be well aware of a case where Germans claimed that nobody in South Africa had registered ownership of a right to a certain plant which has got a medicinal effect. The last time I heard was that, you know, they were getting away literally with murder. And that's why I want to know if plants with medicinal effect are covered either in one of the two presentations or not, so that we cover what is potential. The fundamental reason I'm canvassing this issue is because so many people who haven't gone to formal education are aware, and I'm sure you have been exposed to this as an African, you know, are aware of certain plants with a medicinal effect, but they do not take the trouble to go and register, you know, their rights, so to speak. Thank you very much. So we'll look at it from that angle and see how we can protect those people, particularly because by the very way in which we normally process bills, you'll find that the uneducated person gets missed out of the process with no intentions on the part of government to do so, but incidentally, they just don't come across this process and they miss out. Thank you very much for the opportunity, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Chair, I don't like cap dancing, and I have to be honest, I have not prepared on these presentations, but unfortunately, it's not the committee's problem, but unfortunately, it was only delivered to Afridge and Hall at 9:15 this morning. But it was the building itself, it wasn't the committee's problem. So, I don't like cap dancing, I like to research things before I talk about it, but I'd like to ask the question, because this is something that we've heard about for the last 10 years, you always hear about GMOs, 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 genetically modified organisms. Where does the GMO fit in, number one? Number two, I take an example, I go and buy an avo. The avo that grows in my tree in Peter Maritzburg, I've got two different varieties. The one is the big one, we've got a huge pit, and then I've got the butter one, okay? But I go to fruit and veg a couple of weeks ago, I get the avo itself is about this size, but the pip was not even that size. So this is what I'm trying to see. Are we starting to modify, you know, products so the pips are actually smaller, there's more flesh to it, but also to ensure that you cannot just go and plant that avo pip and it will not grow, you will not have the same effect. So those are just the first questions. Unresearched that I've just got in mind. Then on medicinal uses, I just want to get on to the medicinal plants as well. I think that the plant called the cancer bush, for example, Sutherlandia. Traditional healer Credo Mutua came out with Dr. Nigel Gerica. They worked quite intensively and they brought out the you know, product, a tablet called Sutherlandia to boost the immune system. Now, that is a plant indigenous to our country. I'm trying to just get an idea, and I'm using that, please do not, I'm only using it as an example because I believe there's so many other products that is not specifically done by Credo Mutua, for example, that it is a product indigenous to South Africa. But someone goes, they convert it into a product through a company, for example, like in Kilo Drugs, and put the medicinal value into a capsule. Now, can that be registered as a right by, for example, the individual that does the research on the nutritional value or the value of a product? Or should that be a product of South Africa? If you understand what I'm saying.
Thank you very much. Now that the power is still there, after two, we may go ahead. Can you respond, DG?
I'll let my colleagues respond, Chair, but also to respond by way of an invitation, maybe before we do the final discussion on it. Close by in Stellenbosch, we have the Stellenbosch Plant Variety Evaluation Center that should be quite instructive to the committee, the kind of work and the expense of the work, and just to feel it in loco, it's quite impressive. So just to expand the horizon, I'll ask Julian and will you lead us?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG. It's one of the few times that we wish the ESCOM get to their schedule. but I think we have a competent team of people, and I will respond, and they will definitely add to it. I'm gonna leave the issue around the breeder, because I think you raise a very important point, but perhaps in looking at the actual text within the amendment bill, you may be satisfied. I think in terms of our presentation, we wanted to keep it at a level that's very common and easy to understand, just to explain what we consider as a breeder. So I think if you just consider the actual text of the bill, you may find that your issue is addressed. I will leave the issue of around the expiration of the right and extension of the right be it through putting it in a will, because I think the right still remains what do they call it in legal terms, incorporeal right that remains. It doesn't gain new existence. The right is there, and you can't extend it through that kind of manipulation. But Nolotano will explain exactly how the right the term of validity is determined, because it is provided for. In terms of the issues around the medicinal plant or indigenous crops, I think one needs to be aware of the Biodiversity Act. And Nolotano in her presentation did indicate that we do provide for when an applicant makes lodges an application where there are other legislation which is relevant, you must first provide the proof that you have the authorization of that specific legislation. The example in this case would be if you're using an indigenous plant, you would then have to show evidence that under Biodiversity Act you have gotten the necessary permit application. And the Department of Agriculture is also involved in the advisory committee that looks at these applications that comes under the Biodiversity Act to ensure that all the processes are followed. And those processes include whether there is prior informed consent with the community, whether there's access and benefit sharing regimes in place to ensure that whenever somebody accesses indigenous material, that in fact you make sure that there's benefit that goes back to the communities where the material was accessed from. The Department of Science and Technology also has the IKS, the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Act, which also deals with how do we protect indigenous knowledge systems within our country. And obviously the examples that were listed are very pertinent examples, which shows what happened in the absence of having this legislation. There is also some legislation under DTI, which I don't have the information at hand as to what is its status, but in our formal reply, we will definitely give you an indication of where it is and how the protection is further ensured.
The other question was around genetically modified organisms. I always wish that such a question would not be asked, but it does. It is in fact asked. So, but perhaps I can just say the standards that give you the distinguished uniformity and stability standards, which are applied to conventional crops, are equally applied to genetically modified crops. But I don't think that is your question. Your question perhaps relates to where are the safety issues around GMOs being addressed. And those safety issues, and the safety issues relate both to human and animal health as well as environmental health, those are addressed under the Genetically Modified Organisms Act. And we can definitely brief the committee at some further point on how that act is managed. But and one should not, I also gave the example of these apples that differ so much, and one should not confuse normal breeding and selection with genetic modification to perhaps allay some fears. At the moment, we only have a genetically modified maize, cotton, and soya in our country, and obviously the other vaccines both for human and animal health. So what you would have seen in terms of your arrows would only have been through normal natural selection and not genetic engineering or genetic modification. I will ask Nolutando to deal with some of the issues that I couldn't respond to, and if there's something that Mr. Ramashala would like to respond to, I'll also give him the opportunity, Chair, with your indulgence. Thank you.
Now, this one was just to add on what Dr. Joseph said on the issue of medicinal plants that you are providing, that if it's now under another legislation like the Biodiversity Act or the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Act, when it comes to the Plant Breeders' Rights Office, we check if you have complied with those particular acts so that the right is not granted to an individual that is not supposed to have that particular right. And in terms of the period of protection, that protection, we must remember, is on the variety itself, not on the owner. It's on the variety itself. So if it's 22 years and the owner gives it to the successor will benefit just for that 8 years, because it's on the variety and not the owner. And I think Dr. Jasta mentioned the breeder, the division itself, you read that one, eh? Yeah. Oh. The definition itself, it's what is captured under A, B, and C. That is the person who bred, discovered, and developed will be the breeder. And then the list there is just the examples of who will qualify as a breeder, and they are not listed in the legislation itself.
This one that has not yet been responded to, well, it's the advice that I offered with regard to the composition of the advisory committee. What's your take on it?
I think that one we can take that up. I think it's a good advice that we really need to consider that, because we are right, it's all about economics. Thank you very much.
Very quick. Okay. I really just want to understand. We look about, if we look at the plant breeders' rights and we look at all those, and how do you actually differentiate the GMOs from those rights? I'm just trying to get an understanding. We can maybe do it at some other stage as well, but if, like you say, you can't say that the avo with a smaller pip is not in genetically modified, because me, as just a normal, ordinary citizen on the street, do not know that. But we hear that all these dangerous things that are happening, and so does most of other South Africans that hear it. Like, there's a labeling format to say this is a non-GMO, it's a GMO, or that type of thing. Now, I know we should maybe discuss it under a different legislation, but the question is, for me, that does not research or do not have an understanding, you've got it. How do we differentiate? We talk about maize. That's the bag of
impala, are we sure that that is not GMOs that's been used in it? You know, that type of thing. So, yeah, if you can maybe just push a little bit there.
Okay.
Let's try for the sake of the committee, again, for sharing information, just to allay your fears that none of the fruits are genetically modified. None of the fruits that are produced here in South Africa are not genetically modified. None of the vegetables are not genetically modified. And of the other crops, it's only maize. With maize, we're feeding us around I'm sure 85% of maize is genetically modified currently. With cotton, we're sitting at around 99%, and then with soya, it's 95% genetically modified. So those are the only three crops that are genetically modified at this stage. And the department has been very open that as soon as there are any other developments that say tomorrow spinach is genetically modified, we'll have to communicate that to the public to say, by the way, we have now approved a new GM variety that is available in the country. But for now, is maize, 85% of maize in the country is genetically modified, and then we have already seen the benefit in terms of the increasing yields. That South Africa Dominions have been producing close to 14 million tons, way in excess of what we really need. And then cotton, because of the pressure of diseases and pests, we have to put it in a genetically modified way, and the farmers are quite happy with that. And then soya, again, because of production costs, we have to go the GMO way. But currently, it's only those three crops. None. 85%, yes. 99%. And then soya, 95%. But don't be alarmed. The biosafety protocols are in place to ensure that the safety, anything that is released, goes through this process to ensure that there is no danger to the environment, to the human beings, and other living organisms. So, in terms of food, you might also see that for many years we didn't have these seedless grapes, you know, these grapes that don't have seed. It's merely through breeding, that because. You see that the breeders listen to what the consumers need. If the consumers say, no, we are tired of when we eat grapes and have to chew these little seeds, then now they through normal breeding, they eliminate the seed. And then again, the avo. People are saying, we buy this avo with this, but only inside the flesh is only this. The bulk of it is the seed. Now they reduce the seed. So in future, again, you'll have avocados that have no seed inside. So it's mainly just responding to the consumer needs and the preferences here.
Chair, maybe at some point
if
there's an interest
further from the seed, I think it's probably the kind of questions that consumers ask honourable members. We can do a presentation on that and where the fine lines are. I think it was quite interesting even to me to hear that only three products that where genetically modified inputs are utilized, but you could do that at your leisure.
Yeah. The last time we heard about brining. And we saw chicken in brine. Oh. Any other questions?
Next time we'll talk about the Saha.
Yes. any other questions? Remember, it's still a missing member. The missing is still on. I think we are done. Every 30 minutes after 2, that is how. But it doesn't change on the 21st.